Good morning. If we were to summarize what we're looking at here over these few days in a single sentence, it is the method, the unmistaken and complete method to achieve lasting happiness and eradicate all forms of suffering, which is through transforming our mind, where transforming our mind means all the afflicted minds, the minds on the unwholesome class, eradicating those, recognizing and eradicating those, and all the minds on the wholesome class, recognizing and strengthening our habituation to those.
In order to attain a state of lasting happiness, as I just mentioned, one needs to engage in the two activities of eradicating our afflictions and cultivating our virtuous ways of thinking. This is how one transforms the mind. And to bring that about, the text has thus far presented a number of specific trainings for us to engage in, to transform our way of thinking. The first, which is the very foundation, the preparation for all good qualities we long to generate, is that of ethics, the determination to restrain our mind from coming under the influence of the afflictions, and thereby to restrain ourselves from engaging in harmful physical or verbal behavior. This is the very foundation upon which, or the very foundation in terms of our preparing of our mind, so that it is not dominated by the afflictions, but is rather has the capacity to develop all virtuous qualities. Then the second training was recognizing that our desire is to attain a state of lasting happiness. We then question, who can I rely on to guide me in how to cultivate my mind, transform my mind, so that I do attain at the state of lasting happiness. And that is the three jewels. And there we go for refuge in the second training, with sincerity, day and night, to the three jewels. And continuing, recognizing that this, in the third training, recognizing that this wish for happiness for all is shared with all, and this wish to be freed from suffering is shared with all, we commit to completely refrain from all harmful activities, because they harm at the very least one sentient being, ourselves, if not others too. And accompanying this, to ensure that we engage only in virtuous activities. In other words, we keep our mind virtuous. So this then is the third training, the commitment to abandon all non-virtue, no matter how slight, and cultivate only virtue. And then the fourth, which we looked at yesterday, which was again continuing this theme of all beings wanting happiness and be freed from suffering, we appreciate that on this fundamental level, we are all the same. The differences we observe are superficial. On a fundamental level, we are all the same. But this self-cherishing attitude, it's this that keeps us with a feeling of distance from others, of separation. And it is this that is the cause of all our suffering. And here we commit to eradicating this disease of self-cherishing. And we do so through training in love and compassion, understanding that as we develop a loving attitude towards others, compassionate attitude towards others, our self-cherishing will proportionately weaken. So these four trainings we've already looked at. And the fifth training we started with yesterday, which is, as we see in the seventh verse, all phenomena arise dependently. There is not a single phenomenon which is independent or self-existent. This training then starts with a recognition that all phenomena arise dependently. None are independent. Every object of thought, everything that appears to our mind, does not exist in the way that it appears. The training here is to recognize that we have this consciousness that apprehends phenomena as existing in the way they appear, as independent, when not a single phenomenon has ever been independent or self-existent, but rather are dependent. And to the extent that we can challenge and transform this wrong consciousness, we reduce our belief and our grasping at phenomena as existing by way of their own nature or being self-existent. And Amongst the many essential topics of the Buddha Dharma, the understanding of emptiness is included. Yesterday we also then looked at how would a phenomenon exist if it existed in the way that it appears to us. In other words, if it existed from its own side, by its own nature or essence, if it were self-existent or independent. So all those terms are most usually referred to as the phenomenon existing truly. In other words, the way that it appears is in accordance with the way it exists. It is true. So we looked at that briefly yesterday, how a phenomenon would exist if it did exist in this way. And despite every object of thought, everything that we perceive with our senses or we recall mentally, despite appearing as if it exists by way of its own nature, no phenomenon ever has existed in this way. Not a single phenomenon ever. Not since beginning this time to now. It's not that phenomenon at one point existed in this way and now do not. They never have existed in this way. Nevertheless, this is how phenomena appear to us, as if they exist by way of their own nature. And if they not only appear to be truly existent, but a consciousness grasps, apprehends them as existing in the way they appear. This consciousness is not in accordance with reality, and therefore it's an ignorance. And it grasps at phenomena as existing the way they appear, as being truly existent. So this consciousness is called an ignorance of true grasping.
Tadi meva re ne meva ne di ko ki shewa kha re di tong da ma ta ki shewa kha min da meva chi li ya chi dan da ju ye ko ron ju ne meva yin ne di ko ron zu ki di shim ju she go ko ron yo ma re de ne di ki ke she go min da phan da ska yo ma wa sam sam yo si gi ro ko ko ta ji meva re meva chi li ya an di tin din ne nan zu ki di chi she de ba ne phan da ska yo ma di meva re di ne chi ke di ki she go kha min da sam sam ya ten si gi yong gu ro wa da ma zu.
It's very easy when one is new to this topic, to ask the question, but why is this important? If something has never existed and never will exist, why do I need to even know about it? And then one can readily switch off and miss the great importance of this topic.
よばるびなんて言われて、なしなんごれ。ちなわなしんじね、なんとかぶらんずせんてんじなれや。なわなしん、てんじよれ、せべせんてんじじよれだて。ててんせんせやれ。ちざよれせべせんのでよれ、ててんせれ。ちざにょもばちゃさん、てよれせべじんべじんばて、てんじんでがんずぎさんなろよでるわだ。ちざんじ、にめばしょごれ。にめばしょごばさん、しょごぎんじゃからせね。 妙もばちゃさんじさんせんでるってね、聞こえる。ちゃさん妙もばちゃさん純粋で伝わってる。これ妙ばしょごれ。ちゃさんじ、じ妙ばしょばら、ね、かれ、かねすめばしょごれせね。コロンがじんばなしんじ、よまれせべがざはごごれ。で、コロンがじんばなしんじ、よまれせべがざはごな。で、こう、めばしょごれ。で、はもこな、このじんばなし、よれさんじ、 나와나 有马列斯，但没比金正恩高列斯，没他顶的顶的热，现在谢怀的金正恩低下过来。
Despite never, no phenomenon ever existing from its own side by way of its own nature or essence, this is how all phenomena appear to us. And innately, we grasp at phenomena as existing in the way they appear. We believe that this appearance is true, is in accordance with reality. So whilst true existence does not exist, this consciousness that grasps at phenomena as existing truly from their own side, this does exist. We have this consciousness that mistakenly believes, wrongly believes, that phenomena exist by way of their own essence or nature. And this consciousness we have, it's not in accordance with reality, it's a wrong consciousness, and this we need to eradicate. And why do we need to get rid of this wrong consciousness? It's because it is the very root cause from which all our afflictions arise. It's from this ignorance of true grasping, or sometimes called ignorance of self-grasping, that each and every affliction, whether anger or attachment or pride or jealousy, they all come from this one root cause. And how to eradicate it? Firstly, we need to intellectually understand through reasoning that phenomena do not exist in the way they appear. We need to understand that true existence does not exist, and that when a phenomenon that appears as being truly existent, that aspect of true existence does not exist. And if, to the extent we come to recognize this intellectually, which comes about based on reasoning, we then have a hope to stop or to limit our grasping at phenomena or believing that phenomena exist in the way they appear. Without at least intellectually understanding that phenomena do not exist in the way they appear, there's no way we can challenge this innate grasping of true existence, this innately, spontaneously grasping at things that's existing in the way they appear. So the first step then is to intellectually understand that true existence doesn't exist, and therefore whatever phenomenon that appears as being truly existent cannot exist in this way. Then we can engage in the second step of weakening and eventually eradicating the consciousness that grasps at phenomena as existing truly in the way they appear. But first, before we can eradicate this consciousness, we need to understand that the object of its mode of apprehension, or the object of engagement of that consciousness, true existence itself, does not exist. So to eradicate the apprehending consciousness, the grasping consciousness, we have to understand that the object that it is engaging with, or it's apprehending, true existence, that does not exist.
Dinan 我的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路的路
To summarize what's just been presented, we have a consciousness that grasps or apprehends phenomena as existing in the way they appear. So the process here is to understand that the object that is engaged with true existence does not exist. And when we understand intellectually that that object that is engaged with or apprehended does not exist, we will understand that the consciousness that engages or apprehends that object is not in accordance with reality. It's a wrong consciousness. It's an ignorance. And in that way, through understanding that true existence does not exist, we can eradicate our wrong consciousness, which does exist. We can eradicate this ignorance. So to understand then, so there's that sequence of first understanding that the object that is engaged with true existence does not exist, and thereafter, the second step, one can eradicate the grasping or apprehending consciousness. To accomplish that first step, we need to understand that phenomena are not truly existent. They do not, and I'll use many synonyms, they do not exist in the way they appear. They are not independent. They don't exist by way of their own nature, characteristics, or essence. They are not self-existent. So those are all synonyms. So how does one recognize, to take one of them, that phenomena are not independent, is to realize that all phenomena are actually dependent. As we see in the first line here, all phenomena, without exception, are dependent. And when we understand that phenomena, we recognize that phenomena are all dependent, despite appearing as being independent, we can recognize that appearance of independence is mistaken, and that no phenomenon exists independently, even if we have a consciousness that engages with the object as if it were independent or truly existent. So that's the first step. We recognize that phenomena cannot exist in the way they appear, because true existence doesn't exist, or independent existence doesn't exist. And then the second step is, we recognize that consciousness that grasps at them as existing truly must be a wrong consciousness, because they do not exist in this way. They are empty of existing this way. They are empty of existing by way of their own essence or inherent nature. And that then is the understanding of emptiness. And that is a consciousness, it's a wisdom that understands emptiness and serves to counteract and eradicate our wrong consciousness that believes or grasps at phenomena as existing by way of their own nature.
Dhūyōre sāmbiyo sāmbiyo dhīgāna mēngā kāni sōyōgōre lāmne dējī kōrō dhūy nāwā nāshī dhūy dhūy ngwēnē rē mārē chēpā chēshē meva seor mato samna del ya cheva meje beni du du sambe samsan gidina meva seya kale hawurwa sesna ta cheva jene meva seogurela ta kana cheva chewasen anda duungene imin bachi den tarimba doro chu sebene duungene ne gugyo da thugurwa na doji yuji gugyo tangbe na ya ma so gyoba chi chi pa chi chi den ganza dil du chi di Yigi,
The text at this point presents a very well-known illustration, which is if we take an evening when, well, maybe the early morning when the light is not so good, and we are outside in a forest like this, and we know that in this area, especially on warm days, not like today, that it's quite possible that there'll be snakes around. Then in this low light, in an area where we know we're likely to encounter a snake, out of the corner of our eye, we see a snake. And immediately, we see a snake, and for most of us, fear will arise. Some, perhaps some joy, some interest, wanting to see what kind of snake it is. But most of us, naturally, or spontaneously, fear arises, and we will step back. Now, how do we come to know thereafter whether that really is a snake or not? It has appeared to us as a snake. Another consciousness has apprehended or grasped at that snake as existing in the way that it appears. But then, on closer inspection of the object itself, we recognize it's not a snake. Maybe it's a plastic toy or a coiled rope. And what happens then? Immediately, we laugh to ourselves. We recognize that it is not a snake. It's just a toy. It's just a coiled rope. And that anger, or that fear, is gone. So here, what is shown with this illustration is that an object appears to us, and we naturally, spontaneously apprehend it as existing in the way that it appears. But when we investigate to see if it exists in the way that it appears, it does not. And this is despite it appearing exactly as a snake. We cannot differentiate it from a snake. It really appears just as a snake. Not sort of like a snake, but as a snake. But when we investigate the object, we see it does not exist in the way that it appears. Despite appearing this way, despite our mind believing that it exists in this way, it does not. That consciousness is a wrong consciousness. But from that wrong consciousness that believes that things exist in the way they appear, other afflictions arose, such as fear, perhaps a wish to harm, to kill the snake. But when we investigate and see that it does not exist in the way that it appears, immediately those afflictions are eradicated.
And the next thing is that the next thing is that
But if, as is perhaps mostly the case, that one sees the snake, fear arises, and immediately one backs away, and therefore does not investigate, what will one do? One will take one's fear and go and warn others. If they are in the vicinity, you'll warn them to be careful. Or if it's sometime later, you'll tell people an entertaining story about the snake that you saw. Whereas there was never a snake. It never existed at all, despite your complete belief that it exists in the way that it appeared. All phenomena, not just coiled ropes appearing as snakes, appear to us to exist independently by way of their own nature, and then innately consciousness grasps at them as existing in the way they appear. Every single thought we have, moment by moment, appears to be truly existent, and we grasp at it as such, despite no object ever existing in this way. But when we investigate, we'll come to see that the object does not exist in the way that it appears. It is empty of existing in the way that it appears. And this is the realization of emptiness. And the realization of emptiness, being a realization, is a consciousness, and it eradicates the opposing consciousness of grasping a true existence. The consciousness that realizes emptiness is in accordance with reality, so it's a wisdom, and it eliminates the contrary consciousness, which is not in accordance with reality and ignorance. And moreover, to the extent that we eliminate the root cause, to that extent, all resulting afflictions are eradicated. What I've presented thus far is a review of what we touched on yesterday, which was the first two lines of the seventh verse. Because all phenomena arise dependently, ascertain the meaning of being naturally empty. The next two lines, whatever object arises as an appearance to consciousness, experience it as being like an illusion.
Now,
To the extent that one has come to understand and reflect on what is presented in the first two lines, the relationship between dependence arising and emptiness, to that extent one will recognize that all phenomena, without exception, that appear to consciousness do not exist in the way they appear. Whatever arises as appearance to consciousness does not exist in the way that it appears. And one will know that through one's repeated investigation, coming to recognize that no phenomenon exists in the way that it appears. And therefore, based on one's experience of meditation, even when not in meditation, one will experience everything that arises to mind as being like an illusion.
じゃあ、上心に準備、東部へ東部へ、で、窓場にね、で、縄で車通るようまで、からなな、縄なしん、レーサンバマと縄なしじまで、夢だぶれへ、すべ、サムレ通るようまで。じゃあ縄なしじレーサンベサム、縄なし、まれで夢だぶれへ、すべ、サムレ通るようまで。で、東部にどうそばにな、なんでおかしなめね、ちょかしな、おでなし、縄なしんちよまで、で、縄なしよ、夢だぶれへ、すべ、サムレ通るへ、じゃあ。で、レバイな、
This verse is composed in a specific sequence in that one needs to realize emptiness through the reflection on dependence arising, and thereafter one will experience that whatever object arises as appearance to consciousness as an illusion, without prior realization of emptiness, of understanding that phenomena do not exist in the way that they appear, one will not be able to experience all that appears to consciousness as an illusion. But having realized emptiness, then whatever object of thought arises, one will experience it or relate to it as being like an illusion. And that will mean no afflictions will not arise. Attachments and anger for something that we are experiencing as being like an illusion will not arise. We will not be attached to something we know to be an illusion. We will not be apprehensive or generate anger towards something we know to be like an illusion.
で、あの、で、ディニングドはね、自己、ビニ、テモジ、キュメ、ビニ、キュマ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ、テンヘン、自己、テモ 但是都是在这个里面,都是呢,但是说是三门拿来,没几个的,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了,就是切了 Dilly, 지부디기 초제 삼을 코여도 안 소소의 수부디에 쉽게 하서지 책임도와 딩한 저기 지게 냠녀로 리도와 되네 용도와 안디 멤버야 괜히 배 지게 데모나를 배 심제로 지 되네 진 배직 나르지 쉬우 쇠야 다 되네 지여도 갈래 초알 배지 괜찮 힐링도와 배닝제스 배시 초리도와 되원에 진 괜히 디 심제 말어 와도 데모를 주 말어 와다 지고 간고 배지 디레도 갈신 나대요 말에 정말 이내다 나도 니 때문에 때리고 갑을 봐 셈날 봐 왜내라 도지 나도 그 왜내라 나도 갑을 왜내라 도지 진두고 땡기 진두고 니 진두 봐 인장 안 비디기 직지로 쉬되 직고 날 땅에 셈이야 나 선한테 깨지 차고로 와 디 왜내라 임바다 하고 봐 왜내라 직 딩은에 말이 주말에 삼다네 소화시라지 리기 말어 주부 능리 지구가 제마제 용도 레슬링 때 이기도와 지디 삼나는 미디기 토면 약할에 삼비 삼나리기도와 내에도 직디 소수의 삼나 유에도 쇼로 지디 되는 슈가 소수의 삼나 슈가 지리도와
To understand how we are naturally confused by appearances, taking appearances to be true. So we think of our reaction, our engagement when we're watching a film or watching television. We become very emotionally engaged in what we are seeing, as if it's real. We do not relate to it as if this is an illusion, something, a display that is intentionally being put on by creative people. So we may see, for example, in either a film or in actual sport that we're watching, and we're watching perhaps is a race, and we're emotionally involved in what is happening. And if, let's say, there are two cars racing, we may, as we're watching and engage, our own body turns as if we were driving this car. So we're really involved and engaged with something that perhaps is live, but perhaps it happened some time ago, but we are engaging with it as if it is real. Similarly, if we're watching a film and there's something of great beauty, perhaps some of you really enjoy Australian wildlife, there are many beautiful birds here, and a favorite bird appears, and immediately joy arises in the mind at seeing this bird. When again, this is just an illusion. It does not exist in the way that it appears. Or likewise then, if that bird is killed, compassion arises. We are engaging here with what is clearly a display as if it were real.
Digarasana Chidang Pedi Demo Imbada Chidang Hago Word in a Dinike Tashi Vikablia Penny Jet when you social nangles, when you are imbashed nangorva. Sin Nango de Kabla, Sosuke Toa Seminal, when you are SMB Zimbachi Lady. Digi Shukin Jene, Mazulia, Mishusha, the Muguazi Ligor. And then Egypt was sometimes depending on Marua, sometimes the Zimaiba, Tara Tapshava, somebody. で、あれ、ミシュタイで行きまるわ。せざなんでかれミシュテモダハレミシュタ、ムゲモブリゴ。せざでかれゴス。ペニ、ウェネラ、チャブヨバでハゴゴールで、イナ、テモダシブカセンパパニ、タドシャンダ、サマドペニラ、タドリカブラ。ディパナイでウェネインバシナゴロロレナゴロワ。ウェネインバナヨドカブラ、センナロヨウェネレセメジンバシデティオロワ。ウェネレセメジンバイ、ドブシホルタランゲティオロワ。
When watching a film, getting caught up in the story, perhaps there'll be part of the story where something tragic has happened, or we're observing the great suffering of characters. And whilst we are aware that we are sitting in a cinema and we are watching a film, at that time we certainly are not. We are engaged with the story. We are taking what appears as being true. And because of grasping or apprehending the appearances as being in accordance with reality, we thereafter have an emotional response, and we may cry at the suffering of others. When really what we are observing, and we would afterwards be able to recognize, that these are actors playing a role. This is not reality. But whilst we are caught up in the story, believing what appears is how it exists, we have this emotional response. Despite sitting in a cinema, having gone there intentionally to watch a particular film, we still have this emotional response because we take appearances to be in accordance with reality. If, on the other hand, one were sitting there consciously aware, this is a film, this person is an actor, that person's an actor, I've seen them in many other films playing different roles, this is all untrue, we will not have an emotional response. Our afflictions will not arise in that way. As presented in these illustrations, this is how we engage naturally, innately, with all objects of thought. Everything we think about in every moment, we engage with as if it exists in the way that it appears. And from this grasping at phenomena as existing the way they appear, as existing truly, our afflictions follow. What we need to come to understand is how phenomena abide or exist in reality. We need to come to understand that true existence does not exist, and rather phenomena are empty of existing in the way they appear. And to do so is first we recognize how phenomena appear as being independent, not relying on or needing or being influenced by, for example, causes. And then we investigate to see, but this cannot be how they exist. Rather, they are clearly dependent. And being dependent, they are empty of existing by way of their own nature, or are naturally empty. So this misconception we have, this wrong consciousness of grasping at phenomena as existing the way they appear, is innate. It's deeply, deeply ingrained. To challenge this takes repeated reflection over a sustained period, both in terms of the intellectual acquiring of knowledge, and then meditating, reflecting on this again and again. And in this way, slowly, we'll be able to challenge this deeply held misconception.
What
we've looked at briefly in this and the preceding verse, how to cultivate the wisdom realizing emptiness, or how to understand reality, and the preceding verse, the cultivation of bodhicitta. These two consciousnesses, these two realizations, are indispensable for the attainment of Buddhahood. Without these, a path cannot be attained. A path leading to Buddhahood cannot be attained. With only one of them, that one cannot progress far along such a path. Both are required. And these two, bodhicitta and the wisdom realizing emptiness, are the very essence of the Buddha Dharma. Amongst the many famous yogins of Tibet, the supremely famous is that of Milarepa. And one of the stories from his biography is a student approached him and requested his teacher, "Please, teach me the Dharma." Milarepa looked at him, puzzled, and said, "Please teach me the Dharma? Who is this me? Where is this me that wants to be taught the Dharma? You go away, come back tomorrow, and tell me where this me or this I is that wants to be taught the Dharma." Student then went away, a little puzzled, but nevertheless applied himself to the advice. So, well, I have a wish to experience Dharma. So I have a wish to experience, to understand the Dharma and give rise to it. I went to my teacher. I requested my teacher. I am now walking away and trying to work out what it is that he said to me, what it means. So he is thinking about this I. Then he thought, so where is this I? That's what I was asked to find, where it is. And he thought and he thought and he thought. And he couldn't find an I that exists in the way that it appears, which is independent of the physical and mental aggregates, independent of the body and mind. He couldn't find this I that seems to be different, unrelated, separate from the body and mind. No such independent I could be found. So the next day, he returned to his teacher, to Milarepa, and said, "Rinpoche, I thought about this again and again. And no matter where I looked for this independent I, I couldn't find it." Milarepa replied to him and said, "That is the Dharma you requested. And this is what you must think about again and again. That all phenomena, every object of thought, appears as if it is independent. But when you search, you find it does not exist in the way that it appears. It is empty of existing in the way that it appears. This is the understanding of emptiness, and this is the Dharma that you requested. So think about it repeatedly.
ngā sē sam nā jē, tā jī kō kō māngbō rō tē, tā ngā rā sō kī, tā jī kē jē rō mō chū yō sōng tū, tā ngā rā sō kī ngā sē tī, tī tēng tū tōng bō jī tāng bō tī tāng rō sam tāng kō rē sōng kō rē, jē tā sam tāng sā nē kā rē sā tāng kō rē sē, tā ngā rā sō tū sī nē, ngā rā sō chā sā ngā sā chē yō rō bā tā, ngā jī sē sā jī, ngā sā sam nā chē yō rō bā tā, tā ngā rā sō tū sī nē, ngā sam tāng tū sī tē tū sī nē, sō sō rā rā ngī, ngā sē sam nā jī tāng jē, tā jī sam nā jē, sam nā jī tē nā rē yā, ngā sē tē sō sō rā ngā sē tē, kā nē chē kū tū sē bī yī, tā jī tāng bō jī nē shīm shī yō
Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche, when he guides his students on how to meditate on emptiness, he says, start with the eye. This is the easiest to realize. Start with the eye. And then the meditation has as its first step, which is an indispensable step, is to sit quietly in an undistracted way and try and get a clear feeling for how our eye appears, how our sense of identity appears to us. So this is an indispensable step. We need to understand, we need to recognize how our sense of self-identity appears so that we can engage in the second step. So when we trying to get a feel for how our eye appears, we come to see that it appears as if it is something unrelated, separate, independent from our body and mind, from our physical and mental aggregates. So this is the crucial first step. The second step is then to seek out that eye, seek out this eye that appears to be independent, disconnected, unrelated to our body and mind.
And Korong, not Pumbo, Beje Matanaji Korong, Akoron, Michenda, Kishin, Jugurua, Tishi, Tuya Mindua, the Gazan, and the Kadilla, Kada, Jay, Chedo, the Jeta, to Kujutan, U, Ditama, let the Beje, Dildu, Dilitun, Kishin, Mado, Pumbo, La Maduba, Nagi, let us hear Korong Mindua. Never answer Pumbo, La Joa, made you get another Nawa Nashi, Pumbo, La Maduba, Korong, and Nawa Nashi, made it. Just a demeva, Pumbola, Matuba, Rangoni, Coron, Connor, Jupiter, and Maverick. Maybe Jim Jagarasana, Nadi Joale, Pumpol, Tugu,
In the first step then, we try to get a feel for how the self appears to us, which is that it appears as if it is independent, unrelated, unconnected, not affected by the body and mind, the physical and mental aggregates. Then in the second step, we embark on the process of investigation. So here we can first start by thinking of the consequences if the self existed in the way that it appeared, as independent. So if it were independent of the body and mind, the self could travel from here to over there independently of the body and mind. The body could stay here, but the self, we, could be over there. But of course this cannot happen. The self that is currently sitting would be able to stand up without the body moving. That would happen if the self were independent. We could engage in conversation with others without our body, without moving a mouth, without having a mouth, because our self would be independent of the body. And of course we recognize that this is not how the self abides, so therefore it cannot be independent. It has to be dependent, dependence on the body.
And in Egi, Nanazugi, Nanazu, Digi, Nanazu Pumponga, or Reso Pumponga, Pumbolanga, to go to send the Pumbo Sedi, Nazulinga Sayon, Tangazu de Shere Nibanalaya, Sudan, Sawada, to Shed, number Sheba, said Pumponga, said Sundo, Dina Shizeda, Nanazu Pumbo, Sugi Pumbo, Soyu Pumbo, to Shi Pumbo, to you, number Shi Pumbo, Pumponga. There's a dang Dijing and the near Shedi that Sugi Pumbo Kishar, rather. That Dina and that Sue Dilator Mene, Sue Dilin. Tola, Give a doom into the Kawata or so, Nazgilo Toa, Toa, the Toa de Kariki, Toa de Hajiki, and I give to Toa Dumaki and I give middle. Just I give that magic and I say, Sultude, Toa the duty for Mother, Toa delay, Java Medic, Toa the Majiba, Coromani to Ting Hachi, Middles. There's a do seem to do just that. I give to said, then a mini losing at mini Java Merwa, mini Java Mino Koro give to in and I saw the Dumarwa. Tell me, don't you?
The first illustration for analysis was utilizing the first of the five aggregates that are form, or the body. As we recite at the beginning of the class, the Heart Sutra, it mentions that there are five aggregates: form, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness. The way, again, going back to that first step in the meditation, the way the self appears is as if it is self-existent. It has its own essence or nature, and therefore it exists by way of its own essence or nature, which means it is independent of everything else. It's not dependent. So we just look now in the first step of analysis, whether the self is independent of the body or not, and we see it cannot exist independent of the body. So let's then look at the mind, taking the aggregate of feeling. So feelings are presented as pleasant feelings, unpleasant or suffering feelings, and feelings of equanimity. If the self existed in the way that it appears, independent of the body and mind and independent of everything, our mental processes, what was happening in our mind, would have no impact on ourself. We would be happy whether a feeling of happiness or suffering has arisen. We'd be suffering if a feeling of suffering or happiness had arisen. That would be the consequence of us being independent of our feelings. And this is not the case. For us to experience happiness, the feeling of happiness has to arise. And the second way we can approach this is if the self were independent, unconnected from the aggregates, from the body and mind, such as feelings, it would mean that not only would the self feel happiness or suffering independently from whatever feelings were arising in the mind, but that happiness and suffering that this independent self would feel could come from others. Because if we have no connection here, perhaps then our happiness comes from others. In that, if in someone else's continuum happiness arises, we who don't know them, don't see them, happiness would arise. There would be very strange consequences of ourself being unrelated to our aggregates. Because happiness comes, then suffering comes. But if it's not from our own aggregates, our own body and mind, does it come from someone else's? And of course not. So this then is a second step in the analysis. This process of analysis, when continues through the other aggregates or the other consciousnesses, coming to recognize that the self is not in any way independent, but is clearly dependent, in the case of the self, the physical and mental aggregates. Then, the first step was to recognize how the self appears. The second, with many sub-steps, was the process of analysis. Then one comes to the conclusion. The conclusion is that one recognizes that the self does not exist in the way that it appears. So the way that it appears, we recognize in the first step. In the third, after that which follows the analysis, we recognize it does not exist in the way that it appears. It is not independent, unrelated to the body and the mind, the physical and mental aggregates. And therefore, not existing in the way that it appears, it is empty of existing in the way that it appears. So here in the conclusion, we come to realize emptiness. Reflecting in this way, we come to recognize that nothing exists in the way that it appears. It's empty of existing the way that it appears. How things do exist, though, is dependently. The conclusion, the final conclusion that one comes to, is that through recognizing the dependent nature of phenomena, and that this is the case for all phenomena, nothing is independent, unrelated, disconnected, isolated. Everything is entwined. We come to recognize that our happiness is dependent on others. Because our happiness arises, our happiness is not independent, self-existent, but comes about in dependence on others, on causes. And included with that are all other sentient beings. So here, we start through our realization of emptiness and dependence arising, we start to realize our interconnected relationship with others. We no longer feel separate and isolated from others, but we rather recognize we are closely related to others, that our relationships are entwined. We are not separate, isolated, but we are dependent on each other, mutually dependent on each other. And this recognition brings about a deep sense of closeness to others, overcomes this isolation that we feel, this separateness we feel, and we recognize that we are closely related to others. This then serves as an incredibly powerful basis to generate love and compassion far beyond the strength that one would have already cultivated. Because one sees this close, interconnected relationship with others, we'll want their happiness, because we see that their happiness is no separate from ours. We'll want, and that's where we generate love, and so too with compassion, wanting them to be freed of suffering, knowing that their freedom of suffering is related to ours. So in this way, through cultivating the wisdom realizing emptiness through dependence arising, we add great strength to our love and compassion, and therefore our bodhicitta, our determination to become enlightened for the sake of others. And thereby, We have an incredible strength of mind, striving to become a Buddha for the sake of others. Earlier, I mentioned that in dependence on the afflictions, particularly the self-cherishing mind, will do whatever we can to fulfill our own needs, including harming others and destroying our environment. Buddha Shakyamuni, he taught that as we generate love and compassion for others, we'll want them to experience only happiness and be freed of all forms of suffering and pain, and thereby we'll see our planet, our Earth, as being of great value. Because it's in dependence on the environment that beings can achieve happiness, that many needs can be fulfilled. So wanting beings to experience only happiness and be freed of problems, one will naturally be environmentally aware. So what we've looked at here in this session is a very brief presentation of emptiness. It's presented in far more detail in great texts such as Nagarjuna's Root of Wisdom. Here we've just had a few sentences. But what has been presented in this and the previous two sessions is the very heart of the Buddha Dharma, bodhicitta and emptiness. And this is the very foundation on which we need to strive to become a Buddha. So thank you. We'll conclude here then for this morning. If you have some questions, then feel free to ask. Yes, at the back.
Involved, engaged in attachment to enjoyment of the sound of the singing. So, This is an important point to me in my understanding of the concept I think you're referring to. I often hear about grasping at the church itself, grasping the church itself, because I haven't understood that so well as I think I may have just now, when I think I heard you use the term apprehension interchangeably. Because if I think of the concept of apprehending the church itself as existing as if it were really dependent and so on, that I understand deeply or intuitively or something, that it's not wise or correct or accurate to apprehend this self as individual or independent. So I've never sensed before that apprehending or grasping might be used interchangeably, because to my sense English they're not. So just help me with that. Thank you.
Because this is a translation thing, I'll answer from my side. But before I do, I'm just going to check one thing with Gena, and then I'll come back.
Die nehmen also zusammen sich schämpfen, weil ich doch jetzt dann hier mitmachen. Die nehmen also Jodhüre, die nehmen die Simper, also Jodhüre, wo es Dampo sind hier, die nehmen mitmachen, also die Dampo sind hier. Die konsultieren Jodhüre, die aus Locker, die mehr hat wohl hier die Tage.
Die Simper sind die Semnane, die Räscher, also die Dampo sind die Mikwa, die Mikwa, die Telba.
So there are three words in English, or the one Tibetan word, dzimpa, is translated in three ways: grasping, apprehending, and holding. So they, whilst people will understand the words differently, they will carry the same meaning, because it's the same Tibetan word. So it is a word that that implies, well, holding is quite clear. You're holding onto something, or you're grasping at something. So yes, exactly like that. And if apprehension has a different meaning for you, then it's good to know that when you hear apprehension or apprehending, it means the same as grasping or holding, because it's three different words for the same Tibetan word. There's a different Tibetan word, mikpa. And this involves, so every consciousness has an object. There cannot be a consciousness without an object. So consciousness can often grasp, apprehends, or holds its object. Other times, now it's a different Tibetan word, it observes the object. So I think there in English that there's quite a difference between grasping at something and observing it. So the grasping is clearly like this, and the observing is not. So when you hear observing, which doesn't come up much, but it is that is the word, mikpa, where the way of engaging with the object is quite different. You're just observing it, as opposed to apprehending or grasping or holding, which you're taking it as it, taking it to exist as it appears. So there is that difference. Okay, so in brief, apprehending and grasping, different translation for the same word, and the whichever translator, myself and others, will have be intending a similar meaning because it's the same Tibetan word. But there is a different word for that has a, let's say, a softer approach, and that is translated as observe.
Yeah, 下瓦达拉拉吉古古勒，下瓦些，下瓦的那米克些，这个古勒，就是在下头的米克的那上那上那，地气的进些古勒，但是喇叭的土呢，喇叭煮嘛，调油嘛罗哇，就是喇叭的土瓦的那雨的，雨的落雨进的了，那瓦的了米巴些古古勒，但是明年，但是金巴用古勒，明年金巴土巴用古勒，地用古勒。
Demonstrating that this word zimpa, translated as grasp, apprehend, hold, always involves this kind of action of grasping at the object, right? Holding onto the object. The second word, mikpa, or observe, this can mean observing, so as he demonstrated his hand, just coming into contact with the object, not grasping it. It can, though, that word, mikpa, observe, can have the quality of grasping, of apprehending. So it can have it, but it doesn't necessarily have it. Whereas grasping, apprehending, holding, necessarily has it. These two different terms, they show the way the consciousness engages with the object of that consciousness. So when a consciousness grasps at something as existing in the way they appear, that is grasping at true existence. But every grasping consciousness isn't necessarily a consciousness grasping at true existence. One can grasp at any variety of objects, including the wisdom that realizes emptiness is grasping emptiness. Okay? So what it refers to is this way of engaging with the object. Whereas observe, whatever appears to mind, that's not grasped or not whatever. So something just appearing to mind that we're not grasping at, we observe it. We are not grasping at it. So it's about the way the consciousness engages with the object.
Okay.
Thank you very much.